Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we resume our quest for the perfect pop song
and end up in a teenage wasteland.
All right, so you think the sound quality is pretty good, mm-hmm. Patrick?
Yeah, it sounds good.
Okay. I think the levels are set.
Mm-hmm.
Are we ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right, this is a big week, Patrick.
It is, Jim. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. First of all, it's big because we're out on the deck, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
It's about 100 degrees.
We're spitzing out
with
here.
About 99% humidity.
Yeah.
Which is, in D.C., what we call Monday.
Yeah. Not usually April, but Monday.
That's right. And I have here, what is this?
That is a Black Ox from Old Ox Brewery in Ashburn, Virginia. So it's in your town.
Yeah.
And I was there earlier today after a soccer game. I had to go cool off and picked up their sampler pack. And I have the Farmhouse Saison.
I'm glad you said that, not me.
Which has the old school like lawnmower on it that you don't even plug in.
Ooh.
Yeah. So it's lawnmower beer.
So it's very suburban.
That's right.
And this is the rye porter.
Yeah, it's very nice. Very dark.
Yeah, I like a dark beer, so this is good.
Yep. Got a little malt to it. Very tasty.
Very nice. So this is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
You heard a little bit of suburban chatter there, and you might hear some birds in the background.
Yeah.
And then also another thing we do out here in the suburbs is we get people on the Skype.
We do.
And we talk with them. And so all the way from Indiana, it's my old friend from long way back, Matt Beakley. Matt, how you doing?
Good. Great to be here.
Hey, Matt.
And Matt, first, most important thing is, what are you drinking?
I've had a couple of ryes, and now I'm on to Maker's Mark. So.
Oh, very Cheers. Good. Very good. Cheers.
I got to tell you, it's been almost 2 years ago that I was last at Matt's house, but you can see why I like to go there.
Yeah.
You know, he's got all the product that we need. Okay. All right. So Matt and I go way back. We went to school together in Toledo, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
I'm want to say, we met in like junior high, right?
Yep. Yep. Sure.
And we pretty much, we still talk to each other like now. That's a long run.
Seems crazy. Yes, it is.
You guys still go to shows together, because I was at a show where you guys both were.
So here's the thing. So Matt was out here visiting us a couple of weeks, a month ago, something like that.
Yeah.
With his lovely family, beautiful wife Amy and their son and daughter, and we had a great time. And I had mentioned that maybe we would do some recording. We'd have him. Matt's a big music guy.
Yeah.
Maybe we'd have him
totally.
on the show. But the timing just didn't work out with you and me and their timing and all that stuff. So it's great that he can join us now. We're going to talk a little bit about the show we went to when he was here. But first, I want to hear about Matt's story about 10,000 records, something like that.
So, yeah. I had about that many or a little bit more at one point in my life.
Wow.
So I love music just like you guys. And I collected a lot of records. And, of course, at one point they were very cheap to get.
Yep.
And I had a nice, very nice record player and a very nice stereo system. And unfortunately, I went back to grad school and then was moving. And it's amazing how many friends you can lose after moving 10,000 records several times, but I did lose some friends along the way because of having to cart all those around.
Can understand that.
And then finally, for me, about around 2000, the year 2000, besides moving to Germany at that point, I also, for me, the CD finally started to sound as good as the record did.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a fit of pique, I guess, I sold the records and went to CDs. And so, and in many ways, I'm glad that I did. I'm sad that I did, but I'm glad that I did. You know, with a wife and family now, being able to listen is much more difficult and so on and so forth. Carting them around was obviously a problem. So
But I think this has contributed to Matt's drinking.
Probably, yeah.
He's still not quite over it. He's putting a good face on it, but I don't know.
He really is.
But as you heard there, Matt is quite the audiophile.
Yeah, it sounds
so
like it.
So sound quality is really important to you, probably more so than it is to me. I'm just happy to have any kind of working equipment and hear the stuff. But yeah, how did you get so much into that end of music?
You know, that's kind of a funny story. So there's in the audiophile world, there are two maybe most famous publications, journals about it. There's one called the Absolute Sound, and there's one called Stereophile.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy who ran and founded the Absolute Sound was a guy named Harry Pearson. And my first boss out of undergraduate was a guy named Matt Doris, and his brother Frank Doris worked for Harry Pearson at the Absolute Sound.
Mm.
And so my first job, I was, you know, of course you're making money. You know, that first paycheck you get, you're like, oh, I can't believe they're paying me this. This is insanity. You know, but they're giving me this money. What have I done? But anyway, I remember saying to my boss, you know, boy, one of really like to buy is a nice stereo system. I really like music. And he said, oh, you know, my brother works for this magazine, the Absolute Sound, and they recommend stereos from very cheap to very expensive.
Wow.
So ones that sound good. And so that's when I kind of got into it. And eventually I got to hear Harry Pearson had a ridiculous system. I mean, a giant, like 6-foot speakers that were, you know, thousands of dollars. And anyway, I got to hear that system at some point on Long Island. But that was kind of my introduction then to this idea of high-end audio.
I remember, Matt, once when I came to visit you when you lived on Long Island, and we went to somebody's house or apartment or something like that, and they had this like crazy audio equipment. Was that that guy or was that somebody else?
Yeah,
or do you not remember?
So that was a guy named Frank Doris. So that was my boss's brother. Yeah.
Wow.
I may be getting this wrong completely, but I thought it was like in like the middle of the room, like not even like against a wall, huh? Something.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
And why is that? Is that airflow or something? Or
that has to do with sound staging. So if certain speakers, if you put them against the wall, you don't hear depth in the sound.
Ah.
And so by moving them out in the room, you hear depth. So that's one of the things that audiophiles listen for is depth in the sound stage.
Reminds me of a anecdote I read. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not. You know, you don't want the truth to get in the way of the legend, Jim. But apparently at one time, Neil Young had this stereo system set up on a farm he had. And he would take people out in a boat in the middle of the pond because one speaker was in a barn on one side and one speaker was in a barn on the other side. And he thought the only way you could really hear it was to get in a boat. And so he would row people out to the middle of this lake or pond and play songs.
Now that sounds actually.
All right. So let's get back to the show we went to. The three of us went to together. Mm-hmm. So when Matt was out here in D.C., Northern Virginia.
Yep.
Was right after when you and I interviewed Chuck Prophet.
Yep. Next day.
And then, right. And so that next day was the Chuck Prophet show that we went to, and Matt was here. So we all got to go. And I thought it was a really, really fun show. It was the only time I had seen him live.
Really fun.
And
yeah.
It was great.
Yep. And Matt and I chatted about Henry Rollins and Black Flag, which was great.
Right.
Yeah.
Love that. Yeah.
Because Matt and I went to see Black Flag back in the day. That's it was like one of their last shows. Ever, and I still remember that night. It absolutely one of the best concert going nights ever in my life. I still am kind of, and we took my dad's Buick, drove up to Ann Arbor, which was like an hour away from Toledo.
What a rock and roll town, man.
I'm kind of I'm at the old like gray Buick Century, whatever
Fantastic.
It was, and four-door.
Yeah.
And I'm still kind of amazed actually when I look back that like I was allowed to do stuff like this, because being a parent now you think like
crossing state lines going to see Black Flag,
you're shaking your head like
no way,
I don't know.
There is no way you're going to see Black Flag.
That's right.
No way.
Okay, so when we interviewed Chuck Prophet,
we
asked him, getting back to where we started with this conversation, we asked him about a song that he would consider to be a perfect pop song.
Perfect pop song.
And we saved that little bit when we could address it now on Perfect Pop Week.
Yep.
So let's hear what Chuck had to say. So, Chuck, we want to ask, is there a song out there somewhere in the world that you would consider to be a perfect pop song, and why?
Well, that's very difficult for me to say, but, you know, when these iPods came out, I remember thinking like, oh, this is kind of interesting. And I downloaded a song, and the first song that I downloaded was The Look of Love by Dusty Springfield.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I'd already had it probably on cassette, and I already had it on record, and I'd already had it on CD. And I was like, I don't mind. You know, I don't mind spending another 99 cents. And I remember thinking like, oh, this sounds so great. Oh, yeah. My God. I wish the whole world could feel like I feel right now. But, I mean, I couldn't even say that it's the greatest record. But, I mean, definitely it's, I think it's one of the best vocals, you know. And since then I've learned a little more. I think that was a Phil Ramone recording.
All right.
And okay. Yeah, so for that alone, if you're gonna start with records, you gotta start with the vocal, you know. And I'm gonna go with The Look of Love by Dusty Springfield.
All right. What a fantastic song.
That's great.
Yeah.
Great.
Absolutely.
Pick. We'll add that to our list.
Yes,
our playlist.
Yes. Thank you,
right
Chuck,
on,
for
guys.
Contributing to the
All
canon.
Right. Yeah.
Is in your eyes, the look your heart can't disguise, the look.
What a fantastic pick. Huge Dusty Springfield fan. I think I fell in love with her on the Dusty in Memphis album, which was produced in a little different style and had a little more of that sort of, you know, Memphis sound to it, right?
Didn't everyone fall in love with her then?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's really enlightening and interesting to me to hear both Matt and Chuck talk about the sound of it. Like just Chuck saying, I wish the whole world could feel like I feel right now. I mean, and then Matt sort of talking about that being an audiophile record, you know, as we were talking about a little bit before we jumped on. And
right.
Wow, just how amazing once you get that information to hear how 3D and how deep the strings sound and where her voice goes.
Right.
And man, it does feels like blossoms falling off the trees.
So this is like the perfect storm of guests that we have,
yeah,
right? Because
really
we have
is.
Chuck talking about this song that he loves, mm-hmm. and then we have Matt and his audiophile interest. So Matt, tell us what you were saying before we started recording.
So The Look of Love is by Dusty Springfield is kind of a touchstone recording in audiophile circles. And one of the things that audiophiles value is kind of the breath of life, the ability to kind of look between the speakers, so to speak, and there's a person standing there and singing to you. And this is one of those recordings that really brings that out, that you hear that on good stereo. Mm-hmm. She is standing there before you singing.
Yeah, it's an amazing song, right?
Oh, gosh, just beautiful.
How it's recorded.
And well said, Matt, because you definitely can feel that. You really can. Two things I think are interesting. One, Phil Ramone, you know, that Chuck mentioned, right, as
yep.
an engineer producer, probably best known for producing Billy Joel, The Stranger, and like 52nd Street, but cut his teeth on recording things like John Coltrane and a lot of jazz. And he engineered, you know, Bob Dylan records and all kinds of stuff. So he was really a consummate, incredible audio engineer. And the second thing, it's interesting that Chuck was talking about the iPod. And I'd love that he had the song on every format.
Yes.
Like, that's a sign of a great song.
That is a sign
when
of a great song.
When you get it on every format.
I love
that song.
I'm sure you and I share this, where you've done that with albums,
oh,
right?
Totally. Yeah.
I mean, I can't, you know, just the other week, we're talking about The Clash, and I'm thinking, right, like, oh my God, I had that album on cassette, and then I bought it on CD, yeah, and then I bought it on some vinyl reissue, you know. Every conceivable format, I would buy that album. I'm sure we all have that experience,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then what's funny was when you see the sales figures, I don't know about Dusty, she probably sold pretty well, but when you see sales figures of some of these bands and you think, like, I contributed like three units to that, right? Yeah. Okay. So we're going to take a quick little break here, and then Matt is going to talk about a song he considers to be a perfect pop song.
He's on the spot.
All right. Hey, Patrick. So one thing that you'll hear every once in a while in songs, one of the things I really like in popular music, it was when like one artist like name checks another artist.
Yeah, I love that.
That's
too.
That's really fun. And yeah, like it just comes up in the song, mm-hmm, and you know, like The Seeker or something like that. I asked Bobby Dylan, I asked the Beatles, right?
Right.
You know, it's just
or like,
great.
Life is a Rock and the Radio Rolled Me.
There you go. So we're going to take a moment here to name check Audio Boom, which is a really cool podcasting platform that you can listen to. So if you don't, yeah, listen on iTunes, another way to go, and I think this is particularly good if you're on an Android device,
yep,
is listen on Audio Boom. So what you can do there is you can download the Audio Boom app to your phone, mm-hmm, or you can just, you know, go online, go to audioboom.com, and they have Rock in the Suburbs there.
They do.
They may not consider it so, but we consider it the best podcast that,
yeah,
they have.
Yeah, I like to do that when I'm on my laptop or just working, right? It's easy to dial up audioboom.com and listen to the show.
And then they also have, you know, a lot of other podcasts you can find there. So there's podcasts for business, mm-hmm, comedy, entertainment,
yep,
health and fitness, news and politics, all kinds of stuff. There's some other music ones there, but I don't, mm-hmm, know why you would have any need for those.
No, I wouldn't see why that'd be useful. Do they have anything on hydroponic gardening?
I don't know. Some scientist in a lab coat figures that out.
Sounds good.
All right, so go to audioboom.com, and that's another great way to listen to Rock in the Suburbs. Okay, and we're back on the deck.
Mm-hmm.
You can hear the birds in the background.
We're not going to... Anyway,
if you're an audiophile, you might appreciate yeah, the kind of, you know, ambient sound that we're capturing here.
Yeah, I think so.
Blackbird, right?
Yeah.
Let's hope exactly. So.
Okay. Like, we don't know what this is. We're eagerly anticipating. I don't know. From you don't know.
From a man who once owned 10,000 vinyl albums, I am on the edge of my seat right now.
We hope Matt knows what is, yeah, what do you consider to be a, not the, but a perfect pop song?
Getting to what maybe might be one of my touchstone recordings, I would say, and Jim, you know I'm a huge Who fan.
Oh, yeah.
And so the Who, Bob O'Reilly, is one of those big touchstones for me.
Wow.
Where this is, you know, this is Woodstock. This is, it starts the synthesizer revolution. It's power pop. It's, you know, it's funny also how kind of organic the sound was, meaning that, you know, Keith Moon was not a great timekeeper in some ways. But yet on this recording, I don't know if you guys know this, he goes through the intro and then actually the tape of the synthesizer slows down and you can hear him slow down with it. And while people talk about how Keith Moon wasn't that great of a timekeeper, he was a very organic player, but he was able to do that and make it sound very natural. And this is very hard to do.
This is an incredible pick.
Oh,
as you were,
gosh,
saying it,
what,
you know, it's this
pick,
and it's this and this. I'm thinking, this song is everything.
Yeah.
It really is. It
really is. Teenage Wasteland.
And, you know, Matt and I, it's funny, Matt, you ever watch that show Freaks and Geeks?
Yeah, oh sure.
So it's really funny because that show was set maybe just a little bit earlier than we went to school, but not much. Maybe, you know, like a couple of years,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It was,
yeah,
right around the same time period, and it was supposed to be in some, you know, suburban Michigan setting, and we're, sure, in like suburban Ohio.
Right.
It, yeah.
Same kind of thing. And they were like really into The Who, and
oh,
we were,
wow,
too.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it,
yeah,
was like, yeah, I was like, I'm watching my childhood on this show. And it's just so funny. I mean, Patrick, you and I have talked about this before, about, for whatever reason, I mean, The Who in that late 70s, early 80s period,
yeah,
they still spoke to, you know, teenagers.
Yeah.
Really well. Much more, I think, than the Beatles or Stones did by that point in time, don't you think?
Oh, totally agree. The first day I went to high school, I wore a Who t-shirt because I thought this expresses me better than anything I could possibly wear. Yeah.
So we all loved it. I mean, that was, you know, it wasn't, they weren't of our era, but they were still in a big portion, kind of the soundtrack of our youth, right?
Really were.
It's amazing. So, all right. Well, thanks very much, Matt. We'll of course, we'll hear a little bit of Bob O'Reilly in a minute, if anybody out there hasn't heard it before. Mm-hmm. But before we do that, let's just close by saying that you should listen to our Perfect Pop Week all week.
Every day
on Rock in the Suburbs. You can find us on whatever it's called now, Apple Podcasts or iTunes or Stitcher or TuneIn or Audio Boom. And you were saying?
All your favorite podcast listening devices.
That's right. The way you really want to listen to the show is get a really high-end stereo.
That's right.
And put it in the middle of your room. Right?
Or at Matt's house, listen, with him pouring you a drink.
Ooh, would
be even better.
That's actually the best way to listen to the show. You can also find us at suburbspod.com.
Yes, you can.
And you can also find us on social media, Facebook or Twitter at suburbspod. You can email us rock@suburbspod.com. You can call our suburban party line and you can talk about your pick for a perfect pop song. That number is 612-440-1984. Matt, if you're ever just feeling lonely, give that number a ring.
If you have a few more drinks tonight, just call us up.
We're expecting a series of you discussing each of those 10,000 records.
That's right.
That would be great. Okay, anything I'm forgetting? Are we good?
Yeah, I think we're good.
All right, Matt, thanks very much for joining us. Sorry we couldn't do this in person, but this worked out great.
No problem. I'm glad to contribute.
Thanks, Matt.
I love you, man. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
This was Matt Beakley, and we are going to leave you with Bob O'Reilly.
Phil Ramone, he owes me money.